From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made just last month, about 45 minutes west of Cleveland, Ohio. It was just another September wedding until the father of the bride went off script. Todd Bachman is the biological father of Brittany Peck, the bride. And Todd Bachman was going to walk her down the aisle himself. Seated in the audience was Brittany's stepfather, Todd Sandrosky, who had lived with her for many years. And Brittany's biological father decided that both men deserved to share the moment. So Bachman reached out, grabbed Sandrosky's hand, and pulled him up for duty. And Sandrosky almost immediately fell into tears. It was the image of a blended family, strong, successful, a kind of model for families that include divorce. And that, of course, includes so many families. This hour, we're going to look at the unfortunate reality that for many American children, there won't be a happy viral moment like we saw in that wedding. Divorce can be harmful to children if the parents compete, undermine each other, and turn their relationship into a kind of war. And we do see that. Our panel today sees those kind of stories, unfortunately, every week. They're here to help us see the impact on children and what we all can do to make it better. My guests include Dr. Elizabeth Murray, who's a physician with REACH at the Bavona Child Advocacy Center and a spokesperson for the American Academy of Pediatrics. Dr. Murray, nice to see you.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Also here is Ella Van Loon. She's an attorney primarily representing children in Supreme and Family Courts, and she's with Van Loon Menard. And Ella, nice to have you in studio.
Thank you very much for having me.
And Dr. Joanne Pedro Carroll is here. She's the author of Putting Children First. She's a clinical psychologist specializing in helping children and families. Really wrote the book on this subject and so familiar with so many of the subjects here. And Dr. Pedro Carroll, let me start with you this discussion. You saw that story west of Cleveland. You had this, the cover of your book doesn't look all that different than the viral photos we're seeing. You've got parents holding a child's hand there. You had two dads walking their daughter down the aisle. What did you think when you saw that story?
You know, Evan, I was so touched by that story because, you know, I thought this story is going viral because it's so personal to, you know, millions of people in our country. And my wish as I read it was, oh, I wish those behaviors could go viral. Well, not just the good feeling of reading about it in the moment, mm-hmm. but truly thinking about what a gift those two men gave that daughter. And, you know, there's no greater gift than knowing that the people you love are going to get along and be available to you and that you can love them all.
It would be a very short discussion if it were as simple as saying, hey, if you get divorced and you've got kids, just get along. It's not always that simple, is it?
Oh, it sure is. You know, if only. You know, it's so easy to say just get along. But one of the things we know, certainly, studies repeatedly show that second only to death of a very close loved one, divorce is enormously stressful, one of the hardest things that people can go through. And one of the real challenges is how to manage all the strong emotions that are involved. Because when we're ending a relationship that has been a huge part of our life, our identity, there's a grieving process that goes along with that. There is sadness and loss and, of course, sometimes hurt and betrayal and anger. And those are enormously difficult emotions to manage. And sometimes people get very stuck in the anger and the resentment. And I think one of the really important messages that kind of boils down to a soundbite is you have to love your children more than you resent your former partner.
Mm-hmm. And before we even turn to other panelists, let's listen to some of the comments from the people involved in that blended family, the story that went viral. First, I want you to hear from the stepfather. This is Todd Sandrosky talking about his reaction to being pulled up by the biological father who said, this is our moment. Let's listen to what Todd said.
He came up to me and reached out and grabbed my hand and he said, hey, he said, you've worked for this as hard as I have. He said, you deserve this as much as I do. You're going to help us walk our daughter down the aisle. I mean, I got weak in the knees and everything, and I couldn't have had anything better in my life. That was the most important thing in my life.
Our thanks to WKYC-TV in Cleveland for the sound there. Now, that's what the stepfather says, most important moment in his life. Imagine what Brittany Peck, the daughter, is feeling. Let's listen to a couple of comments here from the biological father, Todd Bachman, and then you'll also hear from Brittany Peck and their thoughts about this.
A lot of people can relate. It hasn't always been peaches and cream by any stretch of the imagination.
We've seen it all, been through it all, but no matter what, at the end of the day, we're all happy.
All right, so you're getting a sense there that that brief little window, Dr. Murray, is when Todd Bachman says, hasn't always looked like this. You're all seeing the viral moment where we're all got our arms around each other. It doesn't. But to me, that's a moment of hope, because the reality is, you know, don't just think that it's easy. It's worth working for, right?
And we know, yeah, if you're coming from a place of pain and hurt, we know that strong emotion is a powerful influence in action. So if you're hurt yourself as the adult in the relationship that is perhaps no more, you got to make sure you're getting yourself into the right place first, because it's so easy to act in ways that perhaps maybe you wouldn't do in a different situation, and realize that impact that has on your child. Because at the end of the day, the child wants to love everybody.
Ella, when we heard Todd Bachman also say, you know, there were tough battles over some weeks and months during the divorce, there were court proceedings, there were those kind of conversations. It does happen. Did this story give you hope and remind you and maybe your clients and all of us that even if we're going through that animosity, that there can be a better outcome down the line?
You know, I was thrilled when I had heard this story. And yes, I think hope is really the number one key that you get from it, because it takes time. It takes time. When families are going through divorce and the parents are dealing with the pain that they have of the loss of the family, you have to imagine what that does to a child, a teenager, a five-year-old, just the sense of stability that they've had and the structure and the routine that they've had. And now they're facing new challenges, new differences, and the parents, it's a new structure for them. So when hearing that you have these over years that they've had strife and they've had court proceedings, the focus really should be on what is in the best interest of the child. That's what the court looks at, for the best interest of the child, and really trying to give children who feel like they don't have much control in their life at all, especially when their parents are separating and getting divorced, give them a voice so that they feel like they can be heard, that their feelings matter, that it's just, you know, when they don't have anything, any control over the situation, they feel like they can take back a little control for themselves.
Dr. Pedro Carroll's book is called Putting Children First. Ella's work in court, the court system, aims to put children first. We're going to be talking this hour about what that means, sometimes from a legal perspective and how that's determined. Because when you've got divorce, parents may be saying, hey, that's not good for the child. My side is good for the child. More time with me is good. We're going to talk about how that is worked out in court and how maybe parents can work that out in a way that doesn't require really so much strife in a court setting. But before we do that, I do want, Dr. Murray, can you just share with us briefly, part of the reason why we are having this conversation at all is not just this good news story west of Cleveland. It's the question of what we do see every day. And I don't want you to be specific. We're not going to mention names. But you see some tough stuff with the way kids are impacted by their parents' divorce, don't you?
We do. And of course, you know, the ground rules of this conversation is we know that there are people out there who do bad things to children. And so we know that there are evils that occur. And we're not talking here about situations of abuse. If you are worried that your child is in physical harm, of course, seek help for that child. But there are lots of cases where parents will say, you know, the other parent didn't seek care 3 days ago when my child had a runny nose, and now here we are 3 days later and the child is fine, but yet they're seeking care because the other parent didn't. And it's, again, it's coming from a place of worry, I think. It's coming from a place of hurt, but it's showing that child of, well, wait a minute, I thought I was okay. I did just have a cold. It wasn't that bad, but wait a minute, now I've got one parent who's upset that the other parent didn't take care of me. And they're acutely aware of this. And so it's just, again, I think the people are coming from the standpoint of, I want to do what's best for my child, but they're just, they're losing the forest through the trees of, you know, is your child okay? Yes, they're okay. Can you talk to them about it? Yes. If you're concerned that the child is not seeking or not getting care appropriately, obviously we can help you with that. But just this overuse of healthcare, overuse of services can be damaging as well. We just need to strike that balance. If people need help, we are there to help them. But this kind of reactive parenting is a thing that can really be damaging to children.
Do you see more kids coming in, being brought in on a Sunday night or a Monday night after that weekend care?
Historically, we did. Historically, wow. And we felt that way. We felt that way. Is there data to prove it? I don't think there is. But we certainly felt that way. And I think that, you know, when the story came out, all the people I work with, everybody kind of mentioned, oh, yeah, you know, that was always the worst. visitation routines have changed quite a bit. There's not necessarily just that weekend visit anymore, so it's changed a little bit. But it's that theme of just back from being with the other parent. Let me see what I can do to figure out if they didn't take good care of you. And that's just so sad.
Sure. Listeners, if you want to call the program and share your own experiences with this very important subject, we'd love to hear from you. It's 844-295-TALK, toll free, 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. It's at Evan Dawson on Twitter. And you can also email the program. You can email me directly if you want, edawson@wxxi.org. And we'll try to share some of your feedback, some of which has already been coming in on the subject. My understanding is roughly 1.5 million American children become children of divorced parents every year. That's a lot of kids. And Dr. Pedro Carroll, when you have parents who are divorcing and then all of a sudden you're starting to split child care, there has to be a little bit of a letting go process, doesn't there? There has to be that sense of, I can't call you and tell you when the bedtime has to be. Mm-hmm. I can't call you and tell you that this is what you must serve them for dinner. And again, every set of parents will be different in how they work it out. But is there a letting go of some control?
Yes, and Evan, I think that's a really great point, because very often it's really hard to let go. And especially when you think about what do we feel more intensely about in our lives than our children, you know? And it's so, in the long run, one of the things we know for sure is that one of the things that fosters healthy children is when parents can work together and provide that supportive, stable family life with both parents. And again, that can be a really bumpy time early in the process. And I think in many ways, one of the challenges for parents is that the marital relationship is ending, but it's so true that the parenting relationship will go on as long as you have those children in common. So that's a forever relationship. And that means renegotiating from your relationship as spouses, lovers, to that of really respected colleagues, hopefully, in the business of raising your children in healthy ways. And so that means a new way of relating. It means respecting the other parent's time with the children. It means being very specific in your communication. And even basic things I hear children say, you know, I know they can't, they're not going to be married. I just wish they could be civil to each other. Basic things like greeting each other, being able to have transition between homes be positive times for the child, not a source of potential conflict.
The research that I have seen, and I know you have seen much more research and done more research than I have read, does indicate, though, that as much as kids may be impacted in the short run, if the parents can be civil, kids become adults who are remarkably resilient, that there are good outcomes here.
Absolutely.
Yes?
Absolutely, yes. In fact, one of the reasons, one of the most gratifying parts of my work is seeing so many families come through these changes, come to the other side, handling all those emotions really well and seeing their children and them thrive, you know, ultimately. It is, and I'm so glad you brought that up, because those long-term problems we hear about all too often aren't inevitable. Those don't have to happen. There are so many things parents can do to reduce the negative impact on their children.
Is a child of divorce more likely to become an adult who gets divorced?
Well, there is some research that suggests that there is a higher likelihood. But I think we'd also need to bear in mind that there's tremendous variability in how children do over time. And if two of the most powerful predictive factors are the extent to which parents can contain their conflict, keep their children out of the middle, and the quality of parenting that children have over the course of their lives. So many children come through it as very healthy, resilient, well-adjusted adults.
All right, before we get to Ilana and Rebecca on the phone, who have already called the program, I just want to ask Ella Van Loon an important question. that some of our listeners have already raised this morning in preparation for this program, which is simply defining what best for the child might mean from a legal perspective, because so many people find that very subjective. And part of the process that you're involved in is making sure that whatever happens in terms of custody and visitation and care, et cetera, is in the best interest. How does that process start to happen?
Sure. So best interest is not a black and white. I mean, law rarely is, actually.
Right.
It's very gray, and there's lots of case law that kind of defines it. But when you're talking about what is in the best interest of the child, you're really looking at trying to, have this child have the stability and their needs met. And, you're right, absolutely. There are parents that say, well, this would be best if the child stayed with me the entire time, or this would be best if the child, was with me only, on the weekends. And the problem is that these children need to be able to feel like they can love both parents and be a part of both parents and have a feel of what works for them. And so I think even taking into consideration how the child feels, not that the child gets to necessarily determine the outcome of proceedings, but taking into account the nature of the relationships, who has been the primary caregiver over a period of time, and how involved the parents are, if there's any history of drugs or alcohol or abuse of some form or fashion, making sure that those are dealt with so that the children can have successful and loving relationships with both parents. It's not simple, and each family is very different, and it's very fact specific, geared towards what is going on within that family.
I want to follow that up with a question on emotion, because we all know people who've gone through divorce, and it can be really tough. And I have heard people say, I don't understand why the judge or the attorney or whoever in the legal process doesn't understand how emotional this is for me. They're cold, they're sort of clinical. Does the law have to try to view, when you say fact-based, income level, home appointment, et cetera, do you have to be sort of clinical in assessing that and try to avoid wading into the emotion that the parents might feel?
Unfortunately, with divorce, or the reality is that it's probably one of the hardest times that parents are going to be going through.
Sure.
And sometimes when in the legal system, you have timelines, you have deadlines, you have trial dates that have been scheduled, and parents' emotions don't always meet with what those deadlines are. You might have a parent who's not quite there yet with the fact that they're getting divorced, or they don't want to be divorced. There are so many times when only one side of the picture actually wants to be divorced, and they just haven't gotten there yet. So it's a very fine balance. As attorneys, we try not to take on all the emotions that our clients feel, because it's difficult for us as attorneys as well. But definitely taking consideration the attorneys, the client's feelings, but also having to counsel them as attorneys. Part of our job is not necessarily to be adversarial, although that is certainly a part of it, but to counsel them on what the law says and what is going to be taken into consideration when trying to figure out what is in the best interest of the child.
Our panel this hour is looking at the impact of divorce on children and the possibility for better outcome if we do better jobs as parents if we get divorced, and think about putting our kids first and what that means. And that's the name of the book written by Dr. Joanne Pedro Carroll, Putting Children First. She's here, a clinical psychologist specializing in helping children and families. You just heard Ella Van Loon, an attorney with Van Loon Menard, who primarily represents children in Supreme and Family Courts, and Dr. Elizabeth Murray, a physician with REACH at the Bavona Child Advocacy Center and a spokesperson for the American Academy of Pediatrics. And Ilana in Rochester is first up. Go ahead, Ilana.
Hi. So I'm a stepmother, and I've been, my husband has three kids from his previous marriage. We've been together for 6 years. This past year, we got married last June, and almost immediately after that, I became pregnant. We have a baby of our own now. His divorce was very ugly. His relationship with his ex-wife is not good, so much so that she did not let the kids come to our wedding, and we worked on that, tried our best to maintain our relationship, especially me maintaining my relationship with them, which was basically good, but she and I are very, very different people, the way we view the world, raising children, and now it's just been a really rough year, from the wedding and then the pregnancy and now the baby. And it's getting a little bit better, but I guess I'm just looking, any advice to make it easier? Because as a, you know, as a stepmom, you're kind of in this, and having my views be so different than their mom's view, I recently have just been kind of withdrawing, as opposed to what I used to be doing of, no, I want to share with you my feelings on this and share with you these experiences I've had. And recently I've just kind of given up on doing that. And I don't know, what are suggestions to mend the relationship? Mm-hmm.
Let me start with Dr. Pedro Carroll. What do you think?
Yeah, that's a great question, Alana. And I just want to extend a particular understanding to you, because you've had some big, big changes in your life. That's a lot that's going on in your family. And, you know, as a stepmother myself, having been in that position, and also with the work that I do with the clients in my practice, one of the things I want to hopefully give you some hope here about is this is a particularly stressful point in your relationship, even in your marriage, because there have been so many changes and a lot of pressure points. And understand that things can get better over time, particularly if you consistently maintain your role with the children as, you know, I often think about this, and studies suggest this as well. As step-parents, one of the best roles, best things we can do is to help the children and their parent have a close, satisfying relationship, and not to try and figure out how to solve all the problems between your husband and his former partner, but rather to really look for ways that you can do some peacemaking. And one of the ways you do that is to, of course, you know, never say anything negative about their mother, and always keep your focus on doing the best you can to control what's it within your control, and really letting go of the things that aren't. I think this is, you know, one of the sources of wisdom for all of us in life. You know, if we can stay focused on what we actually have control over. But I really wish you all the best, and I just want to encourage you to keep in mind that this is just one snapshot in time, and things certainly can get better.
Ilana, do you, I mean, to sort of put it this way here, do you get the sense that any communication turns instantly negative right now?
It was. The baby is now 4 months old, so I've been able to kind of just as a human being become more of a human being rather than just either a pregnant woman or a new mom. So I can pay more attention, and I'm less, and, you know, hormones with pregnancy and nursing a baby is just insane, so it was very difficult for me. Because he has three kids, and the girls are twins, so having a new baby and three kids at my house was like just so overwhelming at first. Now that the baby's a little more, I mean, 4 months independent, but a little more independent, I'm starting to be able to be more, a little bit more engaged, and I think it's getting better, and I know that it's getting better because I've been focused on trying to make it better and trying to tell myself to engage with the kids and not just, you know, because they would come over and I'd just go to my parents' house just to get out of the situation. And I know that that's bad. And I do know that, you know, as they get older, it'll change and our relationship will change. So it's not all negative, but there's definitely a lot of repairs that need to be done now. And I can feel that constantly when they're around.
Dr. Pedro Carroll, do you know too many relationships that don't at least get a little bit better over time? I mean, that the old cliche is a cliche, time heals all wounds. It doesn't heal all wounds, but can certainly help, can't it?
Well, I don't think it's just time alone that makes things better. It's how we manage the situation. And you know, as I listen, Alana, I can really empathize with all of the stress, certainly, that you're dealing with, even postpartum. You know, you're exhausted, mm-hmm. your hormones are raging. And one of the things I really want to emphasize is how important it is to take good care of ourselves and manage stress. It's one of the ways we're a better parent. It's like the old thing we hear on a flight. If you're traveling with a young child and you encounter turbulence, take the oxygen mask for yourself so that you can help others. And I would encourage you, you know, maybe even to consider getting some supportive therapy to talk these things out, because it does sound like there's a lot going on that we can't really even address in the short time we're having this conversation.
Ilana, thank you for the phone call, and good luck to you. I know you feel like you're in a tough spot now, and I hope this has helped, but thanks for the phone call. That's Ilana calling from Rochester. Before I get to our next phone call, I just want to remind you, if you want to call the program, you can for our second half hour as we talk to our panel about the impact of divorce. It's 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI. 263-9994. And an email from Marianne said, therapy. Don't be afraid of the stigma. And every time we talk therapy on this program, I'm actually really heartened to hear so many people say, I'm going to therapy, and it's, you know, let's get rid of the stigma of therapy. And everyone in this room is nodding. You're nodding, Dr. Murray?
Yeah, I mean, it's critical, whether you're a little child or an adult. You know, the adults have to work on healing themselves so they can help the child. That was an awesome analogy about the oxygen mask. I love that. But, kids often are uncomfortable expressing exactly how they feel to the parent, especially if the parent is involved in creating that emotion. So it makes perfect sense that they need somebody else outside of the situation that they can talk to. And even the younger children, whether it's play therapy or meeting with a group of peers who are also going through the same situation, that is just so incredibly, incredibly powerful and helpful.
Ella, does the fact that there's a four-month-old baby and now a half-sibling for this stepmom and her three stepchildren, and now they have a half-sibling, does that change any of the legal calculation on what she should expect for time, for seeing them, for interaction? She's going to want the half-siblings to have a chance to know each other.
Absolutely. I hear what she's saying about wanting to go and spend time other places to try to avoid that conflict. But now they have, you know, these little girls, and I don't know if the third child's also a boy, but, you know, you have a new baby, and what a great way to try and solidify the new family when you have a new baby, to encourage that love. This is now a new sibling that these children have, and I can imagine that they would also want to be spending some new time with the baby as well. You know, sometimes it's challenging for children when parents get married and remarried, and their idea of what their family used to be perhaps isn't going to happen anymore. Mom and Dad aren't going to get back together again, and here Dad is marrying someone new, and shortly thereafter now we have a new baby as well. But, you know, babies are wonderful, and I would imagine that these children would love to be able to spend time with this child, and should be spending time with their sibling as well.
And just a follow-up email from Jane says, this is not a commentary on your last caller, but Jane says she just wants to ask briefly if divorced parents need to be hesitant to introduce new relationships to their children until they're a little farther down the road. Ella, you're nodding right now.
Yes.
Right away.
Yes, yes,
take your time.
Absolutely. I mean, you have these kids that are going through these changes in court, and I think it's very difficult for children to, first of all, have a parent who the parents are no longer going to be together. You're in the midst of a custody dispute. You're in court. Your parents are either still sometimes living in the same house, haven't even separated yet. The divorce isn't finalized. There's tension. There's stress. And now they've got to deal with somehow, you know, a new individual, and they haven't even gotten over the loss of their family yet. And so I think I always recommend to parents when I speak with them on behalf of my clients is, when these children are spending time with the other parent, you know, fine. You want to go and have relationships and meet people. That's fine. But you need to really wait and allow these children to process what's going on with them, and make sure that you're not just introducing someone to the children into someone who isn't a real strong relationship, and then they're going to have to suffer loss all over again, especially when you have, you know, younger children. And I'm sure Dr. Pedro Carroll can talk about this. You know, they're going to be attached to these new individuals and then having to go through this all over again. It's harmful. It's hurtful. You know, take it slow. Take it very slow for the sake of your children.
All right, Dr. Pedro Carroll, pick it up there while we also loop in another question from a listener named Allison. She says, does the age of the child affect the impact of divorce? I think that this loops in with that. What do you say?
Yes, it does. I just really want to underscore Ella's comments, though, about taking those new relationships slowly. It has such a makes such a difference for children. The age of children affects how they react to a separation or a divorce. But truly, there have been so many studies on this question about, is there a better age or a worse age for parents to separate? And the answer is, pretty much at any age, children do have reactions. You know, younger children, preschool age, may worry that if the marital bond could dissolve, if mom and dad could stop loving each other, what's the guarantee they're going to continue to love them? And they may have fears of abandonment, of parents leaving them. And across the age spectrum, I think the universal worry is, what's going to happen to me? So the key, again, is understanding how children process those changes at different ages and how parents can support them.
All right, we're going to get back to your phone calls after this short break with our panel as we talk about the story that went viral and the lessons that have sparked a conversation on the impact of divorce. If you're just joining us, there was that story outside of Cleveland, Ohio, Lorain, Ohio, a wedding in which a biological father grabbed the stepfather from the audience and said, "We're walking her down the aisle together. It's my daughter, it's our daughter." And the photos went viral, the sentiment went viral, and people like Amy are writing to the program. Amy writes, "I'm so glad that this situation did go viral. When I was married 12 years ago, I was walked down the aisle by my stepfather and my father. I also had a father-daughter dance with my stepfather as well. He was always there for me. He always called me his daughter. I was not only his stepdaughter. Thank you." And that's from Amy. So that's what the conversation's about today with Dr. Joanne Pedro Carroll. She's the author of Putting Children's First, Proven Parenting Strategies for Helping Children Thrive Through Divorce. Also, Ella Van Loon, an attorney who primarily represents children in Supreme and Family Courts, and Dr. Elizabeth Murray, a physician with REACH at the Bavona Child Advocacy Center and a spokesperson for the American Academy of Pediatrics. More of your phone calls next on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, question for you. When's the last time you purchased a piece of locally made art? We explore the question of whether Rochester is an arts town that doesn't buy a lot of art. We'll also look at our connection to our local history. Are we a preservation-minded town that doesn't have a good enough sense of our own landmarks? A weekend event is aiming to change all of that. Join the conversation next hour on Connections.
Jonathan Sacks writes about how religion misunderstood causes violence. His target audience?
Young Muslims who are living or being educated in the West, who really are appalled by what is being done in God's name.
And Sacks is the former chief rabbi of Britain. Next on All Things Considered from NPR News.
This afternoon at 4 on WXXI.
All right, let me get back to the phones first, and there's so much more ground to cover. We're going to talk about resources. We're going to talk about forgiveness. We're going to talk about a lot of things in our next 20 minutes. And the next up is Caleb in Pittsford. Go ahead, Caleb.
Hi. My dad has been in the hospital, and his partner has been absolutely amazing. And when he first got together with her, it was hard for me. And a couple times ago when I was out there in the Albany area visiting, when I left, she said she loved me. And I said I loved her back. And it took me a while to get there. So my question is, how do we teach people to be happy and forgiving? I heard the topic of forgiveness come up, and I'm at my flu shot, so I'm going to have to take your answer.
I'm very glad to hear you getting your flu shot.
I was
going to
say,
thank you,
Caleb. Thanks for the phone call. And you've got Dr. Murray here.
That was a plant.
Perfect. Yeah. It was like a planted
Thanks
phone
for calling,
call.
Caleb.
but it's a great question. And Dr. Pedro Carroll, I know that this is a subject you've been wanting to get to. So forgiveness, What do you say to that?
Yes, Caleb, thank you for bringing that up. You know, one of the things, first of all, I was really touched by that little bit that you shared about, you know, how even knowing that that with time people can begin to forgive. And by forgiveness, I don't mean forgetting that some egregious, really wrong was done to you. I don't mean it's condoning. But there is a place for forgiveness in relationships. And one of the things we know, I love the wisdom of Buddha is timeless, you know, that hanging on to anger, I think Buddha said something like, hanging on to anger is like hanging on to a hot coal with the intent of throwing it at someone, but in the end, it's we that get burnt. And hanging on to anger and resentment has a similar effect on us. And being able to let go of that and forgive is a process that can take some time. But there's some interesting studies that show that when that process of forgiveness can happen, people are less anxious, there's less depression. They even report that their parenting is better. And that makes sense because when we're under stress, when we're filled with conflict and anger, plenty of research shows that it diminishes our ability to be as empathic and warm with our children, or even to set limits in a way that we need to. It takes positive energy to do those things.
Thank you, Caleb. Yeah, it really was almost like a planted phone call. It was such perfect timing in the course of this hour. I heard from a listener who does not want to be identified, a male, who just wanted to pose a legal question. And this listener is saying, essentially, as a male who went through divorce a number of years ago, he felt like at the time that the legal system was weighted against dads, that he felt like unless he proved it, he was assumed to have been a deadbeat, that he couldn't really be a caregiver, that, you know, that his ex-wife, in the way he described it, was sort of granted whatever she wanted unless he could prove that he could actually do functional human being things, and that dads are just assumed not to be as involved. And but he admitted that this was a long time ago, mm-hmm. and he wanted to know if the attorney in the room could empathize with him or if things have changed, et cetera. So, Ella, what do you think?
I hear this a lot.
You do? Okay.
I hear it all the time. I hear fathers that come in. So when I'm assigned as an attorney for the child, I'm assigned by the judge. I'm assigned to go and meet with my clients, and I also meet with the parents. I usually meet with the parents before I meet with my clients, so I have an idea of what's going on in the household, you know, what the situation is, what the issues are, what really need to be addressed, what we're looking at and focusing on. And I hear so many times when I speak with these dads, it's always geared towards moms. Moms, she's going to get primary physical residency. I'm going to have to pay all this money. And when in actuality, I would say that, you know, a few years ago, yeah, that I think it was definitely geared more towards female, maybe more of a view that women are more nurturing, not that that's necessarily true. I think, you know, you can see certainly fathers and mothers being excellent parents and nurturing and loving and being involved in their own ways. And at this point in time, I definitely see a shift where there's been more of shared residency, more 50-50, and where, you know, there's even kind of a shift in the mentality that men are always going to be the breadwinner. There are many women that are the breadwinner at this point in time, and wanting to be a part of those day-to-day decisions. And that brings in, you know, a whole host of issues of control issues, which oftentimes come up, you know, when someone has been making these meals or that meals and this person, you know, isn't doing it this right way or that right way. There's tons of different ways that these things happen, and not always one way is the correct way. And so I think it's very important to note that that there is definitely a shift that's going on. There's this openness to having different ways of doing things that, you know, perhaps 15, 20 years ago might not have been the norm.
That's a very interesting point, Dr. Patrick.
And I think it's really important to add that men and women parent differently, and mm-hmm. that's not only okay, but there are benefits to children with that. And that rather than thinking everybody has to be doing it the same way, I want to bring the voice of children into our conversation and into our room here today, because I hear so many children talk about how, you know, they want to be able to have both parents in their lives. They want time with both parents. They want to know that even if their parents can't be together, that they can still love both of them, not have to choose between them.
Okay, and before I get back to the phones, great point. Ella, when you're doing this kind of work and representing mm-hmm. children, direct conversations with kids have what kind of an impact about what they want and what they're telling you?
Okay, so I would say definitely age development is going to play a key part in my conversations with children. You know, a conversation with a 5 or 6-year-old is going to be vastly different than with a 15 or 16-year-old. And, you know, kids at that age, when I'm speaking with them, and actually, quite frankly, I don't like to ask kids, regardless of what age they are, who do you want to live with?
Yeah.
That I think that puts a huge burden on them. It puts them right in
I
the
agree.
Middle. And then there's all this fighting back and forth. And then the parents, they try and convince the child one way or the other. It just creates a whole host of difficulties, when the reality is that these kids need to be kids and not making these adult decisions. They want to have a voice, and as an attorney for the child, it's my legal obligation to zealously advocate for what they want. But at the end of the day, you know, you want these kids to be healthy and happy and have loving and nurturing relationships, and not to be putting this huge burden on them, which is not their burden.
And then all of a sudden, you don't want the parents competing for that, trying to win the
child. Oh, and they do, and they do. And then the kids, they manipulate it because they can. You know, you get these teenagers, and teenagers manipulate generally because that's the phase they're going through in their life. But when you got parents, and I can't stress this enough, communication, communication, communication. And when these kids don't know that their parents are not going to communicate because they can't, and they can't civilly communicate, they like to get into all those cracks and crevices and do what typical teenagers like to do, and this kind of enables them to be able to do it. Right or wrong, it happens.
All right, let me get back to the phones, and this is In Oswego. This is Jim. Go ahead, Jim. Jim,
hi,
go ahead.
Yep. My call.
Yep.
All the points you've been hitting on are spot on. I guess I have a couple of questions. I'm in the finishing up a rather uncivil separation and divorce, and the title of the doctor's book, Putting Children First, made me a little sad, because I've seen, obviously, have not the primary residency as the father in this situation, and I've seen the children put first so much that they believe they can call all the shots at ages 11 and 10. And I worry about how much power is given to the children at that age. They've been to therapy. I've been as well. And I just worry about how much decision-making is placed in their hands, in this case, by the mother. Because it has caused the children to decide when they visit instead of the parents. Mm-hmm. And it makes for a very unpredictable and, of course, for me, unsatisfying visits, because the kids just pretty much want to leave more often than not. Are there any thoughts about that?
Jim, thank you. Go ahead, Dr. Pedro Carroll.
I definitely have some thoughts about that, Jim, and I'm so glad you called in. You know, one of the things we always need to be mindful of is taking children's needs into consideration. And actually, the title of my book, Putting Children First, really means putting their developmental needs as a priority. That doesn't mean giving children full power. And frankly, I think it burdens them with a responsibility that's not good for them. You know, it's certainly one thing to hear their thoughts and their feelings, but they should not have the ultimate decision-making. That's not their job. I think it comes at a huge disadvantage. And I'm sorry to hear that it sounds like somehow the process has gotten off track for you and your children, and that's concerning.
I do worry, as a follow-up question, about communication. I reach out daily to my children I was early on told that calls would not really be acceptable because the children did not want to take calls. And so I didn't call. I tried to do some video phone. That was shut down quickly. I do a daily text message, which is maybe once a month returned. And recently have resorted to the mail.
Wow,
but I can't guarantee that that is making it all the way. Any thought?
Yeah, Jim, thank you. First of all, thank you for the phone call and for sharing this. And this is an important, again, another important moment in the conversation. Ella, when he's saying, you know, was told no phone calls, those kind of things, you're shaking your head immediately. Mm-hmm. What do you make of that?
Well, I mean, it saddens me. And I'm, you know, and I don't know, Jim, if you've had an opportunity to have some counseling with the children or if it's, you know, getting to the point where, you know, you feel that your ex-wife is interfering or alienating the children. But I would encourage you to have some sort of either therapeutic counseling with the children to kind of figure it out and maybe even bring mom in, not necessarily with you, but, you know, for family to try and work this out. These kids are still so young. And, you know, and one thing I want to tell you is, you were talking about these children getting to kind of rule the roost at this age. And I always tell, and the legal standard is that, you know, the older a child gets, the more weight their wishes and desires may have, but they're never dispositive of what the outcome's going to be. And I always stress that to my clients, even if they're 15, 16, 17 years old, that they may have wishes and desires, but that doesn't mean that's exactly how it's going to go for them. Their voice gets to be heard. And even as an attorney, I have to counsel my clients, you know, you may want this, but I don't realistically think this is going to happen. And maybe we should think about doing it this way. This might have a better, it might work better for you. And that's part of a role of being an attorney. So you want the children's voices to be heard. But at the same time, the law is crystal clear that, you know, they don't get to decide it. They don't get to ultimately call the shots.
Let me try to squeeze two more listeners in here because we've had so much feedback. Warren writes to us on the subject of introducing new significant others. This is a great example of when you've got communication, every couple and ex-couple will be different, but you can make it work. He writes, when I met my wife, she had a three-year-old with shared custody. She and the father had an agreement. 6 months of dating before the daughter could meet a new partner. On top of that, my wife, the father, and I got together before I officially met their daughter. We all got along really well, and now we do as well, and I know he's confident of me being part of her life. Thanks for a great show. So that may not work for everybody, but
love it.
But it's a communication. They had the communication.
It's great stuff. Yeah, that's really, really hopeful stuff, Warren. Thank you for sharing that. And John in Webster wants to weigh in on the phone. Go ahead, John.
Hi, Evan. I've been married twice. Both of my wives are from the same religion that started in upstate New York and ended up in Salt Lake City, Utah. And I tell you, I couldn't have wished for better in-laws in both times, better families. 35 years later, we're still in touch. I get birthday cards, Christmas cards from my ex-wife's siblings as well as my children. And I've just got to say I've had a great time since I've been divorced. Couldn't have wished for better families to be out there, you know, rooting for me. And I just think that those people are really living what they believe.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you, John.
It's been a blessing to me, let me tell you.
Well, thank you very much, John.
Thanks, Evan.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for listening and thanks for sharing the story. See, so there's plenty of
Success
stories of hope.
Story.
There you
yes.
go.
Oh, there.
So as we start to wrap here, Tim writes to us and says, great resource for some of your listeners would be Stepmom Magazine. And it says, fantastic publication full of amazing articles and resources produced by a local stepmom, Brenda Okun. So stepmommag.com is the resource they're directing us to. I know, Dr. Pedro Carroll, there's a resource you want our listeners to know as well. What is it?
Absolutely. It's called the Act for the Children program. And I want people to know that this is a parent education program for separating parents that provides information on all the ways parents can reduce the impact of a breakup on their children, how they can parent effectively, together, how they can contain their conflict. There's a section on children's well-being, as well as the importance of parents managing their own stress in healthy ways. There's a legal portion of it. And the program is jointly the volunteer efforts of mental health professionals, judges, lawyers, and it's through the auspices of Monroe County Center for Education.
All right, where do they get it then?
And the way you get information about it is you can call 546-1817. That's the phone number, or the website is actforchildren-rochester.com.
actforchildren-rochester.com. I would also say you can pick up Putting Children First, the book that we've been talking about by Joanne Pedro Carroll that has been a great resource for so many people. Some quick final thoughts. Dr. Murray, you helped spark the idea for this program. We got about 20 seconds. What do you want to leave our listeners with?
Your pediatricians are going to be there to help, and this is so important. You know, the development of your child, the well-being of your child is why we're there, to help you. Come see us. You love your friends, love your family, love your kids. Communicate.
Communicate. So many great stories of communication. I know some struggle, and that's normal, and that happens, but really also some great hope this hour. I want to thank our guests. Dr. Murray, great to see you here. Thank you very much. Ella Van Loon, an attorney, and with Van Loon Menard. Ella, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Great having you here. And Dr. Joanne Pedro Carroll, who is the author of Putting Children First, Proven Parenting Strategies for Helping Children Thrive Through Divorce. That's the book. Doctor, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for this opportunity.
And thanks for listening. Short break, more connections straight ahead.